It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. As all the enthusiasm over tonight's big game illustrates, football remains the most popular sport in America. It's also one of the most controversial. From Deflategate to the concussion debate, football is a game that has detractors. But it's nothing like what the game faced in the early days of the sport. In 1905, 19 high school and college athletes died while playing football. There were calls for a ban on the game. That was also the period of a player who was not only one of the greatest football players of all time, but one of the greatest athletes, Jim Thorpe. Author Steve Sheinkin has written a new book for young readers about this era of football and the era's greatest star. It's called Undefeated, Jim Thorpe and the Carlisle Indian School Football Team. And we welcome Steve Sheinkin to the program. Steve, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
In your new book called Undefeated, you write about the Carlisle Indian School Football Team. And Jim Thorpe was captain of that team in 1912. Tell us about this school, Carlisle Indian School.
Yeah, it's little known today, but in the history of sports, these guys really put football on the map. It was this tiny boarding school in Pennsylvania, which had Jim Thorpe, who became this world-famous athlete, but really was very little known. But they took up football at a time when it was totally dominated by Eastern elite universities like Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, becoming a great football power, which was kind of laughable to many people and seemed impossible, but this is the story of how they did it. And they had to be very creative and innovative to achieve this goal.
This school was not like Penn or Harvard or one of these other football powerhouses at the time.
It was a small school, about 1,000 kids total. And that includes boys and girls. And half the kids were younger than 16. So they did not have a lot of people to choose from in terms of finding big bruisers. But they had great athletes, not just Jim Thorpe, but other really great, talented athletes. Never huge guys, but I think it's more down to what they did with the opportunity and the creativity and determination and teamwork that they put together.
Well, that achievement is even more impressive when you realize that this school, really, it seemed like a cross between a boarding school and kind of a relocation camp. The students were Native Americans, but the way that they ended up there really is kind of part of the ongoing legacy of American history and the treatment of Native Americans.
Yes, that is a part of the story for sure. And the school was even founded by an Army officer who had fought in the West and helped the government to drive Native Americans off of their land and onto reservations. And the school was kind of a reaction to that, saying, all right, now what do we do? And this officer, Pratt, his idea was to found the school in the East in Pennsylvania. And yes, like you said, relocate, to re-educate these kids as if they were immigrants, as if they were coming from Europe or somewhere else and needed to learn to be American, which is ironic, of course. They were the only ones who weren't immigrants. But that was the thinking at the time, was this is going to give these kids a chance in modern American life. And so it's controversial. Even to this day, people have very bitter, very, very bitter memories of these schools.
Tell us a little bit about the game itself and what this team was like. Football in the early 1900s, in 1912, when Jim Thorpe was the captain of the team, wasn't quite the same game that it is today. In fact, many people credit this team, the Carlisle Indian School football team, and the coach, Pop Warner, with inventing a more modern way of football.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It was when the story starts, these guys form their team. In the late 1800s, football was kind of like a mix between rugby, a little soccer, a little just all-out combat. There weren't a lot of rules. There wasn't a lot of preparation or thought that went into it. It was basically no passing, no forward passing. So every play was a running play, which basically involved both teams hurling themselves at each other as a mass, as a human wall. And then everyone would wind up on each other's heads in a giant pile. And you see these descriptions of these writhing piles of humanity with a ball on the bottom and guys punching and kicking each other. And the fans had no idea where the ball was or what was going on even. And that was football. And it was totally dominated by the schools that could get the biggest dudes for obvious reasons, since there was no place for speed or creativity at all. And when Carlisle came along, that's the game that they began to play. And they really had to figure out a different way to play because they couldn't compete, or at least they couldn't compete at a very high level in that kind of environment.
There were people that got very fatally, in some cases fatally injured playing football. Helmets weren't something everybody wore. Describe a little bit the level of violence that was going on in this game.
That was a big surprise to me, even as a football fan. I just didn't know that it was much more dangerous. It's a controversy now, and should be. We should be talking about it. But back then, it was a national disgrace. There were 10, 12, and one year, 19 players died in one year playing football. And it was all because of these mass plays. It was because guys were running into each other head first, and so there were head and neck injuries. And there weren't helmets, you're right. I don't know if the helmets would have even helped much because of the physics of what these guys were doing. But players would talk about growing football hair. Pop Warner talked about this when he was a player at Cornell. And there are pictures of him with a big bushy head of hair as if that was going to protect his head. And it just was part of the game that guys were getting hurt. And remember, too, that you just didn't come out. I mean, everybody played every play, offense, defense, special teams. And it was you were really looked upon as soft if you came out of a game.
Well, because of this, there were loud calls at the time to ban football on high school and college campuses.
Yeah, very loud. It became a national issue. You see the Muckrakers writing about it. It was something that schools started to do, actually, in 1905. Big-time schools, like I think Columbia did it, and Chicago, and Stanford, like big-time, at the time, sports schools. Harvard badly wanted to. The president really wanted to. And if he had, he probably would have died out right there. And one of the things that stopped him was that the most famous alum of Harvard happened to be president, Teddy Roosevelt. And he loved football, and he didn't care, quite frankly, that it was violent. He said, I don't want to raise a bunch of mollycoddles. And I think that the kids coming out of Harvard and Princeton, and those are our future leaders. If they're not going to fight wars, let them play football instead. And that was just the way he looked at the world.
You mentioned these future leaders, and what's interesting is so the teams that Carlisle took on included future leaders, people that President Theodore Roosevelt would say, these are the people that I want to see defending us in battle. And some of them would. So when Carlisle faced some of these other teams, it's kind of like a picture of history. You have Jim Thorpe, maybe the most famous athlete in American history, or at least considered the best. And then on the other sides, you have future generals. You have all of these folks that would go on to make history.
Yeah, absolutely. There's the one game in particular when they played Army, when Dwight Eisenhower played against Jim and tried desperately to tackle him with very little success. It just makes the games even more loaded, I think, with meaning that this tiny Indian school was taking on the sons of presidents and senators and lawyers and bankers. And on the one side, you had these elite families and kids, and on the other side, this team that nobody really in the mainstream seemed to care about or take seriously. And so that it just made the games mean that much more to the Carlisle students that they were told, hey, look, these are the guys you want to try to be like. And so when they could go to a place like Boston, when they went go to Boston to play Harvard, that was the sporting event of the year in Jim Thorpe's day. I mean, that was a bigger event in terms of attendance than the World Series, which is something I didn't realize when I started my research. So these were like the big showdowns in sports in Jim Thorpe's day.
Well, in 1911, the Carlisle team posted an 11-1 record, and we mentioned Harvard. Against Harvard, this was considered one of the greatest upsets in college football history. You could write a whole book about this game, but tell us in particular about Jim Thorpe's game in that victory over Harvard.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there are just some games you just couldn't make this stuff up, these showdown games. And they went into Boston undefeated, really would have been ranked number one if there had been rankings of that kind. They didn't really do week-to-week rankings. They did end-of-the-year rankings. But, they went in to play Harvard, and nobody, like you say, they were always underdogs when they would go to play places like Harvard. And Jim Thorpe was badly hurt. He had a badly sprained ankle, which is one of those injuries that doesn't seem serious, but you just can't really compete on it. No matter who you are, you just need to rest it a couple of weeks. But he refused. He went in and played, and not only played, but since, like I said, you had to do everything, offense, defense, he was also their kicker. So if you can imagine him kicking field goals with a sprained ankle, and that's what the game came down to, his field goal kicking. It's just one of those moments that you would make up for a movie if you were making a movie, but in this case, you don't have to because it really happened.
Jim Thorpe, of course, people know of his Olympic achievements, but I was surprised to find out that like all Native Americans at the time, even though Jim Thorpe represented the United States in the Olympics, he didn't have citizenship. he wasn't considered a full American citizen.
Yeah, that was just policy at the time. And he was considered, they called it a ward of the state, which was ridiculous. He was over 21 by that point. And, of course, was representing the U.S. The country was very happy to have him representing the U.S. in the Olympics because they knew he could win. But, no, he was not granted citizenship. He didn't have access even to his own money. He would have these summer jobs through school, that, and then the school would just keep the money or send it back to the reservation that he had grown up on. And he, since he was not a full citizen, he couldn't even get hold of his own spending money to take with him to the Olympics.
When these students completed their education, when they were no longer playing on this football team, what sort of future was there for the players on the Carlisle Indian School football team once their college career was over?
For the football team, better than most. I mean, for most, it was pretty sad. There just weren't a whole lot of opportunities in general, and some tried to go back to, of course, would go back to their families like any college or high school kid would, and that was difficult to readjust to. But the football players did better. They had a great, in many ways, experience. They traveled all over the country. They were celebrities. A lot of them became football coaches. A lot of them went on to go back to school. They would essentially get their degree from Carlisle, was sort of like an academically maybe a high school with a lot of shop type classes thrown in. So they would go on to college, and a lot of them went on to college and grad school and became professionals. And so I think you see a real difference between the guys who had this experience of being on the team compared to the much more higher number of boys and girls who toiled at this school and nobody ever heard of and had far fewer opportunities.
We don't really think too much about this school now, Carlisle Indian School football team, after this moment in history when there was this dynasty of the team being so good for that period. What happened? Did it sort of fade into the background? What eventually happened to the Carlisle Indian School?
Yeah, like all dynasties, it was like a perfect storm. Like all sports dynasties, it was the right players, the right coach. It all came together, and that never lasts. I mean, of course, Jim left. The players who, around him all moved on to other things. Pop Warner, the coach, moved on to another school. And the school itself closed in World War I. It had always been Army property, and the Army needed the property back because now soldiers were getting wounded in Europe. And so it took the property back and closed the school and made it into a hospital. And now today it's the Army War College, which you can visit and see the remnants of the school. A lot of the buildings are still the same. But it was a short run. This kind of run of these glory years of Jim Thorpe and the team were short. They were very bright, but didn't last long.
The book that Steve Sheinkin's written about this team is called Undefeated, Jim Thorpe and the Carlisle Indian School football team. And he's been joining us to talk about it this morning and the team and these remarkable people. Steve, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. It's been really fun to talk about this.
It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.